Good afternoon. Welcome to Ozarks at Large for Thursday, February 18th, 2020. This is your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. On our show today, State Senator Jim Hendren is leaving the Republican Party. He talked with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics about the decision, and Roby asked him if this means he might run for governor as an independent. Plus, efforts to help cold cattle during this frigid time. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has that report. After Ozark, stay with 91.3 for Here and Now. Today, the city of Denver is trying a different approach in the way it responds to 911 calls for nonviolent incidents. The city is sending healthcare workers instead of police officers. We'll hear how the program is working so far. Plus, the latest from Texas and other states hit hard by the winter storm. Here and Now begins at 1. Another day with fewer than 1,000 new cases of COVID-19 detected in Arkansas. Yesterday's numbers from the Arkansas Department of Health indicate there were 667 new cases diagnosed in the most recent 24-hour testing cycle. There were also 26 new fatalities reported. Hospitalizations reflect no change. Still 638 people in Arkansas hospital beds fighting the virus. Active cases dropped by more than 860. There are now fewer than 8,300 active cases in the state. Hospitals in Washington and Benton counties report 49 patients in COVID-19 wards as of late last night. That's a decrease by 2 people in the past 24 hours. No game for the Arkansas women's basketball team tonight. The contest with Mississippi, scheduled to be in Bud Walton Arena, postponed because of the weather. It's one of 4 SEC women's games not played this evening. No makeup date has been announced. The Arkansas softball team will not play games in Arlington, Texas this month as scheduled. The 4 games in the Maverick Classic have been canceled. So next up is North Dakota State for the home opener at Bogle Park a week from today. And the Razorback baseball season starts a day later than originally scheduled. Arkansas playing 3 games in Texas this weekend. The opener against Texas Tech now set for Saturday night at 7. No winter storm warnings or watches in our forecast, but still winter. A few clouds tonight with lows around 2 in northwest Arkansas, around 7 tonight for the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow, highs from 37 to 40. This is Ozarks at Large. The Northwest Arkansas Kiva Hub at Startup Junkie in Fayetteville has been up and running for just over a year. The Kiva U.S. Microloan Program operates on a crowdfunding model to raise capital for small business owners who might not qualify for a traditional bank loan. As Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek tells us, the hub opened just a few months before the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, and several local businesses turn to Kiva loans to get by.
The 3 local small business owners you're about to hear from have something in common.
My name is Kelvin Haynes, and I'm the CEO of Uncle Chubb's Soul Food and Barbecue.
I am Stephanie Barr, and I'm a nurse practitioner in family medicine.
My business is called Kate McCoy Studio, and I'm doing custom sewing, custom garments, alterations.
Kelvin Hayes, Stephanie Barr, and Kate McCoy are 3 of the 30 small business owners in the region who received a 0% interest Kiva loan in the last year. Haynes says he turned to the crowdfunding platform because his food truck needed a financial boost during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Pandemic started affecting our business, so we had to reach out and look for resources, and that's where this thing came about. It's working capital, you know, because most businesses, small businesses go out of business within their first year because they're undercapitalized. So that was a concern for us.
Haynes says the loan is also helping him get through the slow winter months.
You know, the loan has kept me going as of today. As a matter of fact, I believe, you know, that we'll be able to get through the next month or so. And hopefully we'll see sales turn around and begin to, you know, generate revenue that the food truck will be able to sustain itself.
Meanwhile, just northwest of Haynes's food truck in Fayetteville, Stephanie Barr needed a loan to grow the Direct Care family medicine practice she started early last year.
Direct Care means it's actually was based on the model for people that don't have insurance. So people pay a low monthly subscription fee, have 100% direct care access, you know, Monday through Friday.
Barr says she wanted to hire a social media coordinator who could handle online marketing that educated people about direct care medical practices and to advertise her clinic.
So that's where the Kiva money came in. And in 2 months of using this local person, I went from like 55 patients to like almost 400 patients.
Back over in Fayetteville, last year, Kate McCoy decided to go from owning a decorative painting business to launching her custom clothing and alteration studio.
Well, I had inherited a vintage Bernina sewing machine from my mother, and it was getting having mechanical difficulties and getting harder and harder to find parts for it. And last time I took it in to get it serviced, the service provider said, well, if it starts smoking, you probably need to get a new machine.
McCoy says she wasn't in a position to buy a new sewing machine, but she did happen to know the Northwest Arkansas Kiva Hub Capital Access Manager.
And then Martha just took my hand and off we went. It was great.
McCoy is talking about Martha Londigan.
So Kiva US is to empower small business owners in the United States who we know have been historically disadvantaged, such as minorities, women, people with felony backgrounds, as long as they're not violent felonies, veterans, and persons of very, very low income.
Normally, business owners can borrow up to $10,000, but Kiva increased the maximum loan amount to $15,000 during the pandemic. The organization is also giving borrowers extra time to start paying back their loans. Instead of having to make the first payment a month after getting fully funded, Londigan says payments are deferred for 3 months.
So they are very small loans. They're for any business expense you can imagine other than paying yourself. One of our first Kiva loans went to a little Hispanic woman-owned restaurant in Springdale called Bites and Bowls, and she needed some new panini makers to make more panini sandwiches. She needed a sign for her store.
While anyone in the world can go to Kiva.org to apply for a loan, borrowers in the U.S. will also be directed to one of 35 Kiva hubs across the country. Hubs are established by foundations, chambers of commerce, cities, or civic groups through a grant that allows them to hire someone like Londigan to help business owners through the online application process.
You know, sometimes I have borrowers who can use a computer and know how to do that, but they don't have a scanner. So they'll drop their papers off to me and I'll scan their fictitious name certificate and their LLC papers or their doing business as certificate from Washington County. I'll scan that and email it to them so they can upload it.
The Northwest Arkansas Kiva Hub is supported by the Walton Family Foundation, which is also offering a dollar-for-dollar match to all borrowers in Benton and Washington counties. So if a business owner needs an $8,000 loan, they only need to raise $4,000 from Kiva lenders, and the foundation will match the rest. Londigan says they were able to get 30 people fully funded in 2020.
Nationally, you are required to process and fully fund 10 Kiva loans to keep your hub operational, for Kiva to believe it's worth its time and effort in order for it to continue. So 30 is really good.
Londigan, whose background is in small business banking, says bank loans require a credit score above 680 and come with other regulations that automatically disqualify certain business owners.
With Kiva, the credit score is part of the mix. So you can have a very low credit score. I've had several people who have low credit scores because of very devastating divorces, because of medical situations. So we also look at your debt to income ratio. Even if you've had a prior bankruptcy, as long as it's closed, that's okay. It's a total mix. We're gonna look at your credit score. Is it higher or lower? We're gonna look at your debt to income ratio. If you don't have a lot of bills and expenses and you live simply, even if your credit score is low, you'll still probably qualify for a Kiva loan.
On average, Londigan says it takes borrowers about 2 weeks to get their documents together before she can submit their application. And it takes Kiva about a week to make a loan offer.
And then based upon the amount, you first have to get community, friends, family, customers to loan you. Usually it's from 5 to 30 $25 loans using PayPal.
Those initial loans, which come straight from the borrower's community, act as a kind of collateral.
You have 2 weeks to do that. Then you go live on Kiva.org. People from all over the world loan to you. Every time they loan to you, if you're in Washington or Benton County, it's matched by the Walton family. So we've had Kiva borrowers from the time they met with me, got their stuff together, the whole process, they're fully funded in about 5 weeks.
Londigan says the Northwest Arkansas Kiva Hub's goal for 2021 is to help fully fund at least 30 more small business owners.
You know, it's hard to predict if we got a lot because people were in dire straits. But I also hope as the program grows, people know about it and they trust it. We're also, a big goal for us is to grow our lending community in Northwest Arkansas.
With 1.9 million lenders around the world, Kelvin Haynes, Stephanie Barr, and Kate McCoy all had fully funded loans in less than a day. McCoy describes going through the Kiva lending process this way.
It's just a great, positive, uplifting experience.
Martha Londigan can also assist business owners in Madison and Carroll counties with the Kiva loan applications, but those borrowers will not qualify for a match from the Walton Family Foundation. The application and assistance from the Northwest Arkansas Kiva Hub are free. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
2021 is not an election year in Arkansas, but it is turning out to be quite the political year. The legislature will reconvene once the snow melts. Sarah Huckabee Sanders announced earlier this year she's challenging Attorney General Leslie Rutledge for the GOP nomination for governor. And now one of the most high-profile Republicans in Arkansas is leaving the party. State Senator Jim Hendren is now an independent. Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, asked him about that decision.
Let's talk about your switch from you're leaving the Republican Party, you said in a very dramatic statement and video, to become an independent. Tell me why.
I think it's the way I can best serve Arkansas. I think there's the Republican Party I still love. There's great people in the party. And I know there's a lot of people working hard to right the ship. And but for me, I just feel like the work that I need to do in Arkansas, it's going to be easier for me to do that from an independent platform, not bound to either party.
You obviously have some big beefs with the direction the Republican Party has gone over the last few years. Kind of maybe outline for some of our viewers and listeners what some of your most problematic areas were.
Well, Roby, I don't think it's been any secret that I've been frustrated with the tone of politics for some time. In fact, I think a few years ago you had me on to talk about a program I did called Shot Vow, where I evaluated scorecards that are created to basically push legislators to extremes. During this last election, you know, I got involved by trying to call out some mail pieces that I thought were disingenuous, if not dishonest, again, trying to push people to extremes. And so what I've seen in both parties really is a structure that's gotten more and more extreme and left more and more people without a voice. So that's where I feel like, especially as I've talked to my four grown children, they don't feel at home in the Republican Party like I felt at home when I was their age in the party of Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush. They don't have that sense of home because of what the party's become, primarily with its tone, with its incivility, and with what we've seen with regard to the election and all the things. I just think it's time for us to begin to build a home for people in the center who just feel left out.
So this begs the question. You have been rumored, you've even talked openly about weighing a potential gubernatorial bid in 2022. Could this be the vehicle for doing this? Are you looking at running for governor as an independent?
Not right now. Here's what I will say is I think it makes it pretty clear I'm not going to run in a Republican primary since I just became an independent. But right now, I've kind of pushed that decision to the back burner because before anybody can win any serious race as an independent, there has to be some sort of platform, some sort of foundation. And I'm telling you, there is a hunger for that in Arkansas. 2020 polling shows almost as many people identify as independents as Democrats and within 10% of Republicans. And there's no place for those people to identify and to feel like they're at home. So we're going to build the organization. We're going to build the structure. And then we'll worry on down the road whether or not that is a vehicle that I or somebody else could use, not just for a gubernatorial race, but for an attorney general race or for any number of statewide races, but especially for legislative races. That's where I guess I see my the biggest concern I have in Arkansas politics right now is I have seen the extreme, almost radicalization of the legislature compared to what it was 10, 20, 30 years ago. And, you know, we don't have that. That's not indicative of the Arkansas people. When you look at the governors that we've elected, from Winthrop Rockefeller to Mike Beebe to Asa Hutchinson, we tend to elect centrist, problem-solving people, but yet our legislature has been polarized to the point where it's not reflective of what Arkansas is.
State Senator Jim Hendren talked with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics. For more from their conversation, you can pay attention to talkbusiness.net. And Roby will be back with us later this hour. His conversation with Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin, now a candidate for the GOP nomination for Attorney General, is part of this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas ranks 12th nationally in beef cows on farms. According to the Arkansas Farm Bureau, the state's cattle inventory exceeds 1.7 million head, with more than 28,000 farms producing cattle. This week's severe winter weather is putting a strain on cattle growers and threatening their livelihood. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Megan and Kenny Harris look after nearly 300 head of cattle on hundreds of acres across Bohannon Mountain in Madison County. Around 100 cattle are due to give birth, so the timing of the severe winter weather couldn't be worse.
It's been a total nightmare.
Around 24 animals have calved around the last week and a half. The frigid temperatures are putting the wet newborn calves at risk, so the Harrises have been laying out hay to help warm the calves. They've also been moving some of the baby cows into their kitchen, where they can clean and warm them up before returning them to their mothers.
And my kitchen's not very big. I had 6 in there just a minute ago before we was able to take 2 back to mama, and that was a success. That made my heart feel better.
Unfortunately, they haven't been able to save all of the calves. Harris says 4 were already frozen before they could get to them.
One of them, it took us 1 hour and 45 minutes to pull the baby from the mama, and it was dead. It was already too far gone.
Megan Harris says the situation has been overwhelming, and she hasn't slept or eaten much. One positive result of this week's snowfall is her 16-year-old son has been able to lend a hand with schools closed. Harris and her husband have a lawn and landscape business as well, but caring for the cattle is the biggest chunk of their income. She says they need both businesses to get by, and losing cattle to the winter storm will negatively impact their income.
The way the economy and everything is, the cows aren't exactly worth what they used to be. The feed's high. You know, gas is trying to get high again. So it really digs in the pocket when you lose them.
The cold weather is affecting lots of livestock across the state, not just cattle. Dustin Clark, Extension Poultry Vet for the University of Arkansas Division of Agriculture, says the temperature that an animal can withstand depends on several factors, such as the type of animal and its nutrition status. That said, this month's weather has created an unusually rough environment.
I mean, it's hard on any animal outside in record-setting temperatures like we've had. Like last night, when it was way below zero.
Livestock are at risk for frostbite, but animals can be protected by having a place where they can stay out of a draft and keep their feet warm. The most critical issue is ensuring they have access to feed and water.
If they've got the food, they're going to eat lots and lots of hay right now. Many of the cattle growers are out supplementing with some range cubes. Others may be using some sweet feed and things like that just to give them a little extra boost of energy. Same thing with those who have backyard hobby flocks. They may boost their chickens with a little treat, give just a little added energy. Now, in the commercial industry, they're on a feeding regimen. It's just a matter of maintaining, keeping those feeders so that they're operational, keeping the water lines from freezing so they have plenty of water, and making sure that they can keep those poultry houses ventilated and keep the warm air circulating with their circulating fans inside the house.
The simple act of eating can help cattle stay warm.
You figure on a cow, you're looking at a body temperature of, say, around 101, 101 and a half. Their rumen is a huge fermentation vat. So the hay and everything that's in there is fermenting. So they're getting quite a bit of heat. But, it's not uncommon in some of this cold weather like this. There might be some little frostbite areas on the cows if they're in the draft, on the tips of the ears, things like that.
As individuals put their own comfort aside to take care of their livestock, Clark says it's important they maintain their own safety.
They got to make sure that they dress in layers when they get out there and go out at the best time they can. They want to make sure it's not too dark You know, you don't want to be out there in the dark trying to take care of the animals. I know with the commercial poultry growers, they're out in the dark in trying to keep make sure the chicken houses are doing good. But maintaining the grower's safety is very important. You know, protect your face from the cold with some sort of mask or protect your head. Make sure you dress warmly.
In addition to providing extra food and bedding, Clark advises cattle and poultry growers to be hopeful the cold weather doesn't last much longer. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Three members of the Arkansas Business Hall of Fame will talk with current University of Arkansas students 1 week from today. Gerald Alley, Joe T. Ford, and Janelle Hunt will chat via Zoom from 9 to 10 a.m. February 25th during Presenting the Arkansas Business Hall of Fame. It's an event hosted by the Arkansas Alumni Association and the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the U of A. Matt Waller, the dean of the Walton College, will be the moderator. Pre-registration for the Zoom event required. More information can be found at arkansasalumni.org. And Northwest Arkansas Community College will host a ceremonial signing to celebrate the 15-year anniversary of a business transfer program agreement with the University of Arkansas's Walton College. This will take place Monday afternoon at 3:30 in NWAC's Burns Hall. The original Memorandum of Understanding between NWAC and the Walton College, signed in February 2006, it allows NWAC students to transfer their Associate of Science degree in Business Administration to the Walton College to pursue a bachelor's degree. Since its initiation, the transfer program has grown to over 500 registered students and approximately 100 graduates per year.
Support for KUAF comes from the Walmart Museum on the Square in downtown Bentonville. Scheduled visits are welcomed daily from noon to 6 p.m. WalmartMuseum.com to reserve your visit or for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Department of Transportation and the Federal Highway Administration have cleared a final hurdle to constructing a new northwestbound access road to Northwest Arkansas National Airport in Hyphal. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, planners are hosting a public forum early next month.
To catch a flight from Northwest Arkansas National Airport from Fayetteville or Springdale requires navigating miles of narrow country roads through several rural communities. But that's about to change. Federal and state transportation planners have landed on a new remote access route, says Alex English, Airport Public Information Officer.
We've definitely listened to our passengers. This is something that's been a long time coming to improve these roads and or, you know, do something, build something, construct something completely different so that our passengers can have, you know, a more efficient and a much more safe route to X&A. Because a lot of people take this route, depending on what their position is, what their job is, what their travel schedule looks like, they can be taking this, you know, several times a week.
Ever since X&A opened in November of 1998, replacing Fayetteville's tiny Drake Field as a new major airline transportation hub, constructing a safe access route has been a priority, including possibly a toll road.
Yeah, so several routes, several alternatives were first proposed when this project was first kind of starting, getting looked at. And one of the options was obviously to do nothing. I mean, if there wasn't a need, that would have been maybe more of the option there. But the two or three other alternatives we had would include improving roads, including Arkansas 112, Arkansas 264, and then a combination of a new road and improving those, you know, Arkansas 112 and Arkansas 264 as well.
The toll road concept has long been scrapped. Currently, Arkansas Highway 112, which intersects Highway 412 west of Springdale, is a favored route by many Fayetteville Airport passengers. Another way is Highway 264 westbound off Interstate 49. But planners aim to build the new Northwest Extension off Highway 612, the new Springdale Northern Bypass that will eventually connect to U.S. Route 412 west,
which was somewhat of the preferred alternative that we had at the very beginning of this when we first started having the public meetings. That was some of the feedback we definitely received. And that ultimately, after this environmental study has been now completed, that is the that's the route, that's the alternative that has been chosen to start moving forward with.
The projected cost?
Construction is estimated to be around $79.7 million. And then the right-of-way acquisition on top of that will be around $5.8 million. So for a total cost of around $85.6 million for this construction, for this project. That will be paid for by the highway improvement program that we all voted on back in November, which was approved by voters. And the airport have federal funds that we can allocate towards this road as well.
According to planning documents, 240 acres of land will be required for the right-of-way, taking two homes and three businesses. That's cited in the newly released Highway 612 Extension Environmental Assessment conducted by Garver Engineers, available for download and public comment through March 17th. The assessment evaluates the access route's impact on water quality, wildlife, protected species, and culture.
Correct. So it's considered a highway, and it's going to connect the Springdale Northern Bypass and Arkansas 112's interchange. And it's being designed to be as efficient for our travelers as possible. So there won't be any exchanges or any opportunity to exit. It's a straight route to X and A. It'll be four lanes, 4.6 miles long, and it will really cut down time for our travelers getting to X&A, getting to their flights. So we're really excited about it. It's something that has been a long time coming and definitely will make our passengers safer and able to get to the airport much more quickly.
And safely, according to a traffic study conducted by planners, crashes have been concentrated along 112 North from 412 to Cave Springs, as well as 264 West of Cave Springs, both single-lane roads being the main southwestern routes to the airport. On March 2nd, a one-hour live virtual public meeting is scheduled at 5:30 p.m., where project staff will be available to answer questions. Links can be found by searching xnaaccess.transportationplanroom.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Design work is being completed to construct a new sky bridge connecting the terminal to the airport's new four-story parking garage. Project goes out for bid in early April, according to Alex English. Other capital projects include a Western Terminal expansion plan concurrent with projected employment growth and recovery from the pandemic. That plan being prepared for completion by March.
Welcome to today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. I'm Paul Gatling. Arkansas Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin was the first person to announce his candidacy for governor in 2022. Last week, he was the first person to drop out of that race. Griffin said he will instead seek the Republican nomination for Arkansas Attorney General. We will hear from Griffin on today's program. Plus, a financial update from the Razorback Athletic Department. We've got those stories after the break on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. More information at ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
On February the 8th, Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin said he was pivoting from his pursuit of the governor's office to pursue Attorney General instead. His departure from the GOP primary field for the state's top office leaves Sarah Huckabee Sanders and current Attorney General Leslie Rutledge still in the race. Griffin said his switch was made after hearing from supporters. Here is a portion of his recent interview with Roby Brock.
Tell me, why did you exit the governor's race? What was your reasoning beyond what I've read in the statement there that you thought about it, prayed about it. But what were kind of some of the political dynamics that moved you out of that race and into the AG's race?
Well, a lot of listening. A lot of people, particularly my supporters, encouraging me to continue to serve, but to serve in a different role. And I had looked at the AG race earlier, but there was just a lot of encouragement to run for Attorney General. Listen to my family, listen to a lot of supporters, listen to the Lord. And at the end of the day, listening was a good idea. And look, the AG position, the Attorney General position, fits with my background. 25 years as an attorney in the military. I'm a commander at Fort Bragg now. I've been a federal prosecutor, served on the House Judiciary Committee when I was in Congress, and worked at the Justice Department. So I'm excited about it. I got a lot of encouragement to do that, and we're off to the races.
Clearly, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, at least from reports that I get, does very well in internal polling among Republican primary voters. Do you think you might make an endorsement in that governor's race?
I will make an endorsement in that race. I'm still catching up on about 500 text messages. So if I have friends out there or others who have texted me and I haven't replied yet, I will get to making a ton of phone calls just to communicate what's going on my side. But I will be making an endorsement, and I have some strong feelings on that race. And I've had some great discussions with Sarah, but not today.
All right. So, but there is a time frame that you do have in mind for that.
Not a specific one, but it will be during my lifetime. Okay. I mean, it'll be, could be a week, could be 2 weeks, three. I haven't given a ton of thought. I'm still drinking from a fire hose on this other stuff. But I've never been one to hold my opinion back, as you know, from college. But yeah, so I'll be weighing in on that at some point.
All right. What is going to be your agenda as Attorney General? Are you going to deviate much from the way that Leslie Rutledge has conducted herself in that office? Do you have a different direction you want to take things? What's going to be on your, I guess, what's going to be your MO?
Well, look, I'm Tim Griffin. I'm not anybody else. And so I will be me. And it's a very important office. It's particularly important in the current context with a Biden-Harris administration. You may recall that I was a member of Congress during the Obama-Biden administration, and there were a lot of battles that we had to engage in there, political battles that related to Obamacare and the legality, for example. And I think in this particular administration, attorney generals are going to be the tip of the spear, fighting a lot of those battles through the courts, and when there's federal overreach, we have a constitution, and everything that passes out of Washington, whether it be regulatorily or statutorily, does not necessarily comport with the United States Constitution, and we've got to be a check on that. Look, let's take Obamacare for an example. It went all the way to Supreme Court. The way it came out of Congress was that all states had to expand Medicaid. Supreme Court said, that's not right. That's an overstep of the Constitution. And so that gave states the right to either expand Medicaid or not expand Medicaid. That's a real life example of how litigation by attorneys general and others can impact folks' lives, our lives in here in Arkansas. And you've had a number of instances where there's been what I think are overreach from the federal government in the form of executive orders. Some of them may implicate, have legal implications. Some may not. One, for example, the Keystone Pipeline remains to be seen on that and in terms of the legal consequences. But you also have this gender issue, this transgender issue, where a male who identifies as a woman can play sports against other women. And, you know, this is a bit of an extreme example, but if, for example, LeBron James started identifying as a woman, he could compete in this, based on this theory, sure, in women's sports. Look, so I think there'll be a lot of things that need to be litigated. There could be potentially Second Amendment issues litigated. I think attorneys general collectively are going to play a really important role.
And that is Arkansas's Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin, a Republican candidate now for Attorney General in 2022. Leon Jones, who heads up the state's Fair Housing Commission, said he also plans to run for Arkansas Attorney General on the Republican ticket. You can watch more of that Griffin interview with Roby Brock at talkbusiness.net. Due partly to the COVID-19 pandemic, the University of Arkansas Athletic Department reported a double-digit decline in revenue for the 2019-2020 fiscal year. Still, the department came within $500,000 of breaking even. According to the university's revenue and expense report submitted in January to the NCAA, an annual audit by accounting firm Landmark PLC shows the department's total revenue to be $123.35 million for fiscal 2020, which ended June 30th. That's down 10.2% from $137.5 million the previous fiscal year, giving some perspective on how the pandemic's onset impacted the Razorbacks' bottom line. For a deeper dive into the Razorback financials and what the current fiscal year may look like, you can check out our story online at nwabusinessjournal.com. That's the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week, most of our noon shows were preempted by NPR's live coverage of the impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. But you can always hear our daily shows at 7 each weeknight and by subscribing to our podcast for free through any of the major podcast distributors. It was on one of our 7 p.m. shows last week that we talked with Catherine Tucker, the executive director and one of the co-founders of the Arkansas Cinema Society. We wanted part of that conversation to air last week so she could discuss a film screening of Minari that was taking place later last week. Today, more from the conversation about the expansion of the Arkansas Cinema Society to go beyond its Central Arkansas origins.
A lot of Arkansas filmmakers were interested in reviving what was the Little Rock Film Festival. And it ended up evolving into more of what the Austin Film Society is, based on some inspiration that Jeff has had being involved with that organization. And then we really wanted to cater our film festival to be to accommodate our audience a little bit better and the bandwidth of our audience. And so we changed it to a curated festival that has less screenings, but, you know, maybe bringing in some bigger names. And so the idea being that we can all watch screenings together and then talk about them after the show. And everyone's seen the same thing. So there's no cross programming. You're not splitting your audience. So we kind of reimagined some of, not kind of, we reimagined what the Little Rock Film Festival had been, but we're also trying to fill that hole because they did such a great job with that festival building the film community. I really credit them with the film community that exists in Little Rock now. Because the truth of it is, you don't create films if there's no way to show them. And so I find that, you know, if you give people the opportunity to screen their films, they A, make them, and then B, make more of them. So the long-winded answer is that we really, you know, we started as in Central Arkansas, but our mission has always been to be a statewide organization that connects and feeds all things film. So we certainly don't want to come in and step on the toes of any of what any other film organizations are doing. We love what the Fayetteville Film Festival's doing. We love what Bentonville's doing. That's why we partnered with them on this first screening event. We helped the Fort Smith, the guys in Fort Smith at their film society, get the funds to start their 501c3. We really just want to support anybody that has an interest in film, whether it be a film festival or a filmmaker needing to, you know, understand a little bit more about screenwriting before they write their first screenplay. So we're really kind of evolving to into more educational programs statewide. That's kind of our future, I think. And then ultimately building a workforce so that there's more production in the state.
Yeah. And building a workforce, meaning that there are people that know how to be a boom operator. There are people that know how to, you know, identify places or items that filmmakers might need.
Of course. So the thing I love about film, and of course I will advocate for it always, but it's kind of a perfect industry because it employs all types of people, including artists. And, you know, I'm an artist and artists have a lot of trouble getting jobs a lot of times. And it's looked on as an impractical career, but in the film industry, there's hundreds of people on every movie set making deep six figures that are all artists. But it also employs caterers and accountants and attorneys and electricians and location scouts. It really is kind of its own small little world. And I, you know, it's arts, it's tourism, it's economic development. It's kind of checks all the boxes in terms of an industry. And I think, you know, California certainly figured that out. Georgia certainly figured that out. And I think that it's a hot button topic here in Arkansas now. And what we really need to do is just have enough production to employ the Arkansans that are filmmakers to keep them in Arkansas and stop being a farm club. And training these our amazing young people to go work in Oklahoma or Alabama or Georgia, and to be able to retain them by having there be enough work year round that they stay. And then that boom operator that you talked about, you know, when two movies come into town and there's only one boom operator, then that boom operator's intern gets a job. So that's growth and that's great. And that's kind of what we're trying to do.
And it's circular, right? You want to keep the talent in the state, but you want to have enough talent in the state to attract the projects to come to the state.
Right. So it's very chicken and eggy, right? It's like, which comes first? But it's really all kind of has to evolve. The ecosystem has to evolve all at the same time. And I think just raising the public consciousness of film is great. I just got contacted by the Economic Development Commission in Newport, Arkansas, and they want to start a film festival. So the Arkansas Cinema Society is going to help them develop their film festival. And as part of their arts, they have an arts festival every year and they're adding film to it. So I love hearing that because it's just film being brought into the conversation and included in the conversation more often than not, both in arts and business.
Catherine Tucker is the executive director and a co-founder of the Arkansas Cinema Society. She talked with us last week. You can find out more at arkansascinemasociety.org.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. KUAF is supported by Pack Rat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, serving Northwest Arkansas since 1973 with backcountry and urban footwear, clothing, equipment, and more. Pack Rat is dedicated to conservation and waste reduction. PackRatOC.com for online shopping, shipping, or curbside pickup.
Tomorrow on Science Friday on KUAF, Dr. Anthony Fauci answers key questions about COVID-19 vaccines, variants, and when we might be able to get to a new normal. Plus, Amazon warehouse workers in Alabama are voting on whether they want a union. Google employees just got one. Tune in to Science Friday for a discussion about how tech companies affect their employees. Science Friday from 1 until 3 tomorrow afternoon on 91.3 KUAF. And join Dr. Caitlin Ahrens for Scratching the Surface tomorrow at 2:04 during Science Friday on KUAF.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with some perimeter while I look through my window and see blankets of snow covering my surroundings. Today, I have found for you some music to warm our spirit, as I hope everybody is safe. We open today with Chengting Liao's a cappella arrangement of Australian band Hiatus Kaiotis' single Molasses, sung by students of Berklee College.
Mechanical and frail. How do I tessellate? Feel to the rage. Hey, you're ready or not? Radical and enamored heart. Color of sulfur vanish with a single heart. Porcelain and smolder.
It might not get it. It might not get any better. Hey, but there's music, the magic of human voices, and that warmth and joy. In 1966, Nina Simone released a song called For Women. It was both a civil rights protest and a feminist anthem, representing the identity of four different African-American women. With each of the four verses of this song, she told the stories of the women, Aunt Sarah, Sophronia, Sweet Thing, and Peaches, women that are somewhat trapped in their stereotype while simultaneously seeking their own self-definition. Let us listen to an excerpt of the Berklee group Black Lives Matter performing a cover of Nina Simone's song, this one recorded in 2016. My skin is brown, my manner is tough. I'll kill the first mother I see, my life has been rough. I'm awfully bitter these days because my parents were slaves. That was the Berklee group Black Lives Matter performing a cover of Nina Simone's 1966 song For Women. Nature always promises us better days, and I am holding on those promises of a warmer time, a brighter time. A summertime. We ensemble perimeter today with a rendition of American composer George Gershwin's song from 1934, Summertime, performed by the vocal trio Melanated Melodies, composed of Boston Conservatory at Berklee musical theater students. Stay warm, share your warmth, and celebrate Black History in February and in every month with at least 28 days. This is Leah Uribe, associate professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Siloam Springs. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors today included Susanna Sitek, Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, Leah Uribe, and Roby Brock. Timothy Dennis produced our show. Lee Wood produced today's edition of Sound Perimeter. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal with Paul Gatling is produced by Stephanie Brock. It comes to us through our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more at talkbusiness.net. Our theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can find Daryl online at his Facebook and Instagram feeds almost every afternoon. You can find out more about his music wherever you find out more about music online. We are always available online at OzarksAtLarge.com. You can also ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large, and that request will deliver the most recent daily edition of our show. You can also sign up for the free, once a day, every weekday, email newsletter from Ozarks at Large. To do that, just go to KUAF.com. And, of course, we will be back on the air tomorrow at noon and then again at 7 p.m. for a brand new Friday edition of our show. Tomorrow, Michael Tilley from Talk Business reviews the week's news. Becca Martin Brown, the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, will give us an idea of what we can do virtually and perhaps in person throughout the weekend. That's on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. And you know what? By the end of today, we'll be fewer than 700 hours away from spring. So stay warm, get rest, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for your continued attention to Ozarks at Large and your continued support. You can support your public radio station, KUAF, by going to supportkuaf.com. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio North on an icy street, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening. Back again tomorrow.